Welcome to Inclusion Catalyst, where we are smashing the barriers of exclusion and giving diversity a starring role. Tune in as leaders step up to tackle complex social justice issues by showcasing the best inclusion practices around. If you dig what you hear, please subscribe, share with friends, and give us your star-studded rating so that together we can keep on making inclusion happen.
What's up, everybody? This is Julian Geiser from Greatheart Consulting. My pronouns are he, him, and you're listening to the Inclusion Catalyst podcast. Today on the show, we welcome Elena Beard. As a philanthropist and entrepreneur, Elena utilizes the power of business and sports to shift how women and girls experience opportunities. She is the founder of Transition Play, a talent firm that specializes in helping women athletes live prolific lives across their personal, professional, and public domains beyond the game. Elena is the founder and president of the 318 Foundation, a nonprofit committed to improving college, career, and life outcomes for young women in underrepresented communities through the 318 Vision Mentorship Program. Elena is also leading a bid to acquire the rights to a WNBA franchise. Best known for her storied athletic career, Elena won championships at every level, from high school to the WNBA and internationally. She was the first woman basketball player to have her jersey number retired at Duke University, a four-time WNBA All-Star, and an integral piece in leading the Los Angeles Sparks to a WNBA championship in 2016. At the back end of her career, Elena won back-to-back Defensive Player of the Year awards in 2017 and 2018. She retired in January 2020 after 15 years in the game. During and after her time in the WNBA, Elena found success as a small business owner, startup founder, mentor, and advocate for female athletes in corporate America. After her retirement in 2020, she served as a senior associate at Silicon Valley Bank. Welcome to the show.
Julian, thanks for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
And it is quite a story. The bio is quite storied. I was like, man, I love reading people's bios because I'm always just so impressed as I'm reading them. I'm like, man, I'm like glowing for you on your behalf. I'm like, damn.
No, thank you. I'm definitely sort of in a place of just privilege, right? I've been able to, one, do what I love for the past 20 plus years. And this mm-hmm. has just led to sort of me continuing to do sort of what I love now. So it's always interesting sort of hearing the bio, right? Because I don't necessarily read it.
Right.
But just hearing it sort of, you know, on replay. I don't know. It's haven't accomplished very much just yet, right? I'm just beginning in life after the game, but it gives me sort of some motivation to keep going, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. And it's interesting to think about a bio in relationship to this kind of first question that I have for you around some aspects of your identity, you know, that are most important to you. Because I imagine as we hear our bios, like we almost like, I find like, even if I think about like, if someone were to read my bio, I would probably like dissociate at a certain point, be like, oh yeah, that's right. I had done that. But I don't know. It's interesting how we identify with our previous selves in some ways.
Absolutely. I would agree.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about some of the aspects of your identity that are most important to you. Elena, as we get started today, I was hoping you might share some of the aspects of your identity that are most important to you.
Oh, goodness. Where do I start? Obviously, because people don't know, but I am a mother, right?
Uh-huh.
I think that means sort of the world to me. My son was born in 2019 on the day of a game and the day of his baby shower. So he knew he was the perfect fit for our family there. So I am a mother. I am a wife. I am obviously a former athlete, entrepreneur, connector, and someone that believes that, you know, I have a ton of responsibilities to make sure that I set sort of the example and foundation for those who are sort of following.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I love that you led with being a mother. I think parenthood is, speaking for myself, I, as a man, like I didn't really identify, like before becoming a parent, I didn't really think about it as much as on any point. And then like, it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. Like when it happened, I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be a critical one for the rest of my life.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's real, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, we take, not that I ever took my parents for granted, but you don't necessarily understand sort of the responsibilities of a parent until you become a parent.
Right.
And sort of having the privilege of raising or guiding a good human being in this world is something that I don't take lightly. And it's something that I wake up every single day ready to sort of get at. It's also, you know, it gives me sort of perspective on, not to go sort of too negative here, but why we we have so many unhappy and at times bad people in this world. Mm-hmm. Because it is the responsibility of that community and the village and the parents to pour into that human being to make sure that they're, you know, living a good life for themselves, but also for others. Yeah. So I have a lot of fun doing it on a daily basis.
Elena, anyone who has seen you play understands why you named this newest startup of yours Transition Play. I actually went back and watched a couple highlight reels in preparation for this conversation. And as a two-time Defensive Player of the Year, you really seem to thrive in transition. I've personally found that it can be a particular daunting and difficult place to be, whether that's happening in life or work. So given some of the persistent uncertainty we seem to be living through as individuals and a society, what are some of the key ways that you've found to be, as you call it, transition ready?
Right. It's all a process, Julian. I don't technically, as you mentioned, like we're always transitioning, we're always evolving. And if you stop it, you're not necessarily growing and living sort of the life that you're meant to sort of live. It was, I guess, to me, being transition ready is being ready to say yes to sort of any opportunity that fits within that circle of what your mission or desire is in this world. And sort of in my case, it's my mission and desire to create the shift in how women and girls experience opportunities, whether it's on the court or in sports or in business or in education. So just one, being ready to say yes to being authentic and secure in sort of who you are, because that will then sort of lead your purpose. And then I just think sort of the third thing is just always being ready to do the work and staying sort of consistent and persistent in whatever process that is sort of presented to you to sort of derive or get to the outcome that you're after.
Yeah, thank you. And you shared as part of our prep here, you shared Transition Play's overview. Mm-hmm. And from that, one of the statistics that really stood out to me, and this is from some research conducted by Ernst & Young, is that 94% of C-suite women are former athletes. And that of that 94%, 52% of them played at the collegiate level. So there's some pretty obvious qualities around discipline, self-improvement, teamwork, et cetera, that would help explain why this is the case. But beyond some of the perhaps more obvious ones, what do you see as some of the other core qualities that are making the women you're working with successful both in and outside of their sport?
Well, you've named them, right? And it's not too many, you know, that are far off, but just being competitive and sort of being mm-hmm. resilient and sort of whatever task is at hand. I can sort of just, you know, I don't know, reflect on sort of my journey and how in 2010, when I became like super sort of focused on preparing for life after the game, it was sort of when I had a career-ending injury, a potential career-ending injury, where the doctors literally said, Elena, you have a 10% chance of returning sort of to an elite level.
Wow.
And in that moment, I had to make decisions, right? My identity was wrapped into the game from the moment that I can remember at the age of 10. The ball was in my hands, and I quickly developed sort of this love for the game that led me to sort of, you know, becoming, being able to attend Duke University or becoming sort of that professional athlete. But when the doctors come and basically say, Elena, you may never play again, like what's next? My mind completely sort of shifted to sort of that preparation. One, it was rehab. Two, just having the fear of not being ready for that next outcome. And so I use that story just to sort of speak to the resiliency of just athletes in general, but in particular female athletes, because as you know, we take a different course. I've had the privilege of playing in 27 countries because of the game, but I've also had to play in 27 countries because we don't necessarily get the same sort of support as our male counterparts, right? 6 months domestically, 6 months internationally to sort of supplement the income, to sort of continue to pursue my passion, but to also, you know, make a living. Mm-hmm. And I say that not in a negative way, because I wouldn't change anything for the world. But what I do understand is that was my responsibility to sort of building for the next generation. And that's something that you'll see in many female athletes, right? We take this, we have this selflessness and understanding that this is this game and sort of the moment that we're in is bigger than us. Mm-hmm. I can go on and on about it, right? But you also, another example I can sort of point to is just the WNBA and how these women, you know, at the height of the George Floyd and Breonna, you know, Taylor sort of murders, they stepped up to the plate to do what was right and sort of advocating for what should be done. And if that didn't sort of catch your attention, you're not listening. Right. So I only use those examples to just point to sort of the value that female athletes can bring to sort of any organization, simply because of the journey that we're quote unquote forced to take, but we take it because we love what we're doing. And we also understand the responsibility that comes.
I'm curious. I mean, that resilience piece, I think, is really important. I wonder, like, for folks who aren't, you know, either don't know someone who's a professional athlete. Do you feel like that resilience, that kind of like the resilient mindset that you're speaking about in terms of not just in the game, but even like after the game, is that something that culturally is kind of cultivated by, you know, veteran athletes like yourself, right? In 2010, you had this, like, you're like, man, this might be it. You know, 10% chance of return is not very good odds. Did you feel like up to that point, people had mentored you to kind of always be thinking like, if I slip here, if I fall there, if I get critically injured, like, what's next? Or not so much.
Yeah, no, it's not, you don't think about that, right? You think about the joy that the game, in my case anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Every time I stepped on the court, that was my safe space. That was my, as chaotic as it is, you know, with the fans cheering and having to be sort of locked in every single aspect of the game, it was the place of calmness for me. Mm-hmm. And so you don't necessarily get to the level of being elite without having resilience or being resilient at your core,
right?
Because everything that you sort of do as an athlete is a process, whether it's developing sort of your jump shot, learning how to dribble, learning how to move, learning how to think, all of it is a process. And what I'm trying to, you know, get one, companies to understand or to focus on, but also to get the athlete to understand, is that all of those skills that you've been able to acquire throughout your journey are transferable, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you apply those to be your prolific self, but to also bring the value that I know you can bring to an organization and perform at a very high level? Yeah. So it, you know, just to reiterate, you don't become an elite athlete without being resilient, without being competitive, without understanding what it means to work as a team, or to sort of work as a team, but also playing your role and understanding the role of mates at the highest level. So all of it comes together and it plays a major role. I shouldn't say that I didn't, but I got a true sense of what it meant to understand the importance of every single player at the highest level when we won a championship in 2000. Because I found myself knowing and understanding sort of what we had in that moment in terms of a team dynamic and composition. Right. Like, I knew from the day we walked into like the first day of training camp, I was like, this is a championship team, right? I knew that in 2016. Everyone was there. Everyone was focused and locked in. And it was going to take us putting ourselves to the side and coming together as one to realize the potential. And so I found myself throughout the journey in 2016, just constantly questioning whether or not we were doing it the right way, because we had never won a championship at the WNBA level. No one on that team had ever won a championship. But you look at these other teams who have sort of created these dynasties, and I'm like, they have that championship culture. They know what it takes. But I found myself just trying to understand and making sure that every single player, 1 through 12, stayed locked in and understood their role and played it to the T every single day. And so those are the qualities that we bring to the table. And it's just a matter of how we apply them sort of in life after.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you kind of setting up the next part of the conversation here around, you know, the things that you're doing at Transition Play. You know, we know that representation in the workplace is critical. It's important that people can kind of look up and down the leadership level in an organization and see themselves reflected. I think historically over the past 20 to 30 years, this has meant chasing representational parity and, you know, with gender and racial demographics across the whole employee base. And I think today, the evolution of this practice is a bit more honest. I think companies are now specifically looking at representation at each segment of the organization, you know, kind of up and down. And I think as they do that, they're realizing there's still a lot of work to be done. So from an equity and belonging standpoint, we know that it's critical that we get good demographics across the organization at every level of leadership. And what I really love about Transition Play's mission is that you're not just building one bridge into entry-level positions, but I think you're really doing a lot of work to help employers understand that there's lots of value in plugging your transition-ready leaders into just about any leadership position. How's that been working out for you and for the partners that you're working with?
Yeah, no, it's been a ton of fun, right? Because not only... I get an opportunity to educate corporate America on sort of the mind of an athlete, right? But also, you know, one, I'm really hesitant to say selling, but emphasizing sort of the value that we can sort of bring to an organization. So it's been a lot of fun. It takes finding the right partner mm-hmm. who has at a high level an understanding of the value. To just really sort of get our points across. I can name one I know that you had sort of James White, who sits on the board of the Bay Clubs on a couple of weeks ago. The Bay Clubs is one of those companies who from the get-go didn't take very much explanation, but understood sort of the value sort of that these athletes would bring to the table and jumped on it. They quickly became sort of one of our anchor partners. And sort of bringing these women sort of to the table, obviously Transition Play is working on the back ends to sort of work to develop them professionally, getting them to understand sort of who they are as a person, getting them to understand their powers and how they're transferable sort of to corporate America, understanding your purpose, but also leveraging the platforms that you have to now dictate what pathways you're taking. And so the Bay Clubs understood that sort of from the get-go. But I think if I had to sort of emphasize just one thing, it's been a ton of fun just educating corporate America on the makeup and the value add that athletes, in particular female athletes, to an organization.
Mm-hmm. I often look at, and you have children yourself, and I often look at my kids and like think about their play. We were just actually talking about this morning. Just my 5-year-old was like, "Well, you have to go to work today, and I don't have school or whatever," and I was like, we were just like talking about how, you know, their play often is, you know, they're often working at something as they play and learning. And you talked about a little bit about the resilience, but also the joy and the safe space that you felt when you stepped onto the court, like you felt like you're doing what you were meant to do. And I feel like that the importance of play is probably not lost on people who are professional athletes, right? As like a kind of a foundational piece of their identity, but also the importance of the connection between play and work, you know, and if you can approach everything as play, right, you're probably gonna be way more successful and joyful and effective.
No, I think that's what it is, right? And I mentioned it early on. I had the privilege of doing exactly what I love for 20 plus years and getting paid to do it. And not many people can say that.
No, for sure.
So I understand that. But that's also what a part of building out Transition Play is sort of just getting sort of female athletes to understand that you can simultaneously do both, right? You can pursue the passion. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely pursue what you absolutely love, but at the same time, you can also start to sort of, you know, focus on what's next without mm-hmm. taking your eye off of what you love. And so in getting these athletes to understand it, it also positions them to be ready to make that transition and not feeling like that they have to settle.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with coaching. There's nothing wrong with staying within sports. But a lot of athletes stay within sports because that's the only thing they know. Mm-hmm. And they're too scared to step outside of their comfort zone to pursue what they don't know. And that's the whole purpose. You touched on one thing a few minutes ago, and it was about representation.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing is believing, right? And so other female athletes seeing me being okay with being vulnerable, being okay with being a rookie and starting all over again is exactly what's needed to build the community that we're building.
Right.
When I first started at sort of SVB Capital, again, I was 100% in over my head, right? Of course, I did the work, right? I prepared myself, did everything that I needed to do to get to that position. But to say that it was overwhelming would be an understatement, Julian. Like I would go to bed at night with tears in my eyes because I was so upset with the mistake that I maybe made throughout the day, or knowing that I had to like give this massive presentation sort of in front of the team, right? Like all of that brought a ton of anxiety, but that's exactly why I said yes to it, because I knew, one, that I needed to build a capacity that was going to prepare me to take on sort of or achieve sort of the bigger goals that I've set for myself. But I also understood the responsibility. I understand the responsibility of doing it for others. It's impossible for me to speak on it if I've yet to live it. And so having, being the individual that represents the female athlete in sort of the spaces that I've been able to sort of explore, it's huge for me. It's huge for me. I remember one of my first board meetings at SVB Capital. I walk into the room, sitting around the table of maybe 35 to 40 people. No one in that room looked like me, right? Yeah. Predominantly
still white, you know, yeah.
Right? Very few women. But here I am looking around that room and searching for someone who's going to help me sort of navigate. And so transition play became transition play because the community that I was in search for, I couldn't necessarily find. I'm not saying that it wasn't there, but I couldn't find it. And so I decided to build it. And that's what we are.
Well, I love the mission. It makes a ton of sense to me. It's so super necessary. One of the things I am curious, I know that you provide a ton of support on the back end in terms of helping people get transition ready and then mentorship and things like that. As they enter organizations, I'd love for you to speak a little bit to what are some of the things that aspiring inclusive leaders who are listening, what kind of key support do transitioning athlete leaders need from them as they enter the workforce?
I think it happens, right? It's very similar to recently graduated senior, right? Entering into sort of the workforce. I don't think there's a difference in terms of the support and training that is needed to get them acclimated to the environment. I think the one thing that it's a lot of things, but the one thing that if I had to like choose one is the feedback, right? I think as an athlete, we're so used to getting instant feedback. And so for the, you know, whether it's a shot, right? I missed it a little bit to the left. For me, I know how to correct it sort of in that moment. Or if it's, you know, the coach on the sideline, you make a defensive mistake, the coach is like yelling out, you know, instantly sort of the correct sort of movement or positioning on the court. And the challenge for me sort of when I made that transition is not having that instant feedback, but two, not having sort of the individual sort of within the company who gave me direct feedback, right? I'm not going to break. I didn't become an elite athlete by being, you know, quote unquote soft. So I think if I had to pinpoint sort of one thing that sort of employers could do to ensure that they're supporting sort of the athlete at the highest level, don't be afraid to tell them when they're wrong. Don't be afraid to tell them when their work is not the best work, because that's how we built sort of a championship mindset, being told that it wasn't right. And now sort of finding a solution, you know, in terms of how to make it, you know, better. So feedback is critical.
Cool. Yeah. I feel like this model comes up almost every time probably in this podcast, but the Radical Candor model by Kim Scott is one that I really like. And it, every time, you know, when people, whoever they are, talk about feedback, I feel like everybody always says, just like, you know, kind of give it to me straight. And if you care, you know, I'll take it.
You have people that say that, but can't receive it. Right.
Right. Absolutely.
Give it to me straight. Like, I want you to be direct with me, but there are moments when people feel that it's an attack on their work. They take it personal. And that's one thing that I learned sort of along the way is just don't take anything personal. Right. And that was one message that I would always give my teammates. Right. You have the coach coming at you sort of a certain way, your teammates coming at you sort of in a pretty aggressive tone at times. It's not about you. It's about the situation at hand and how we can sort of improve and be better as a team. And so Don't take it personal. Always do your best and sort of come together, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, and then any key bias or obstacles that you find that these athlete leaders are finding as they transition into the corporate space?
That's another thing. I think athletes are capable of adapting. But with anything, it takes time, right? So I think for athletes, it's about sort of just being patient and understanding that this is the start of a new process. Taking time to sort of reflect on your journey as an athlete and bringing sort of those learned are those lessons that you maybe went through throughout sort of that journey and transferring those into sort of your new journey are critical. In the sense of transitioning from the court to sort of SVB Capital, that was a moment of reinventing myself. And the one thing that sort of got me through that was understanding that in 2010, I had to reinvent myself. Right. And so learning how to manage it in 2010 prepared me to manage this transition in sort of 2020, 10 years later. It was the same feelings, the same vulnerabilities, the same uncertainties, but just giving yourself a little bit of grace sort of in those moments as a transitioning professional is always key.
When you define that transition play, you define transition readiness as the ability of an individual to seamlessly activate and optimize their sense of person, purpose, powers, platforms, and pathways to achieve an ongoing success and impact in their second act. It seems like a lot to attend to in a six-month program. So I am curious, amongst them, where do you see the most consistent strengths and where do your athlete leaders need the most support during this period of transition, those five Ps?
Yeah, no, I want to clarify that as we've pivoted. And since a couple of months ago, we decided that we wanted this journey to be flexible to the athlete, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of forcing them to sort of acquire and learn all of these things within a 6 month period, we realized that that's not a natural progression.
You define transition readiness as the ability of an individual to seamlessly activate and optimize their sense of person, purpose, powers, platforms, and pathways to achieve ongoing success and impact in their second act. Amongst those five, where do you see the most consistent strengths and where do your athlete leaders need the most support during this period of transition?
No, I think that's a great question. I think most athletes understand what their purpose is, and which is rare, right, at times, but we've been blessed with sort of a platform. And what you see is that the athletes want to basically pay it forward. Right? It's the community and the village that sort of raised you along our journey. We've had coaches, we've had mentors that has helped us sort of achieve the highest of the highest. But I think where we have, I wouldn't call it trouble because I think this is a beautiful journey for the athlete, but just getting the athlete to understand who they are and who they want to be a person, right? I think it's, I don't know if we all understand who we are as a person, right? I'm 40 years old. I'm still like evolving. I'm still learning. Every day it's something new.
Yeah.
And so just getting sort of the athlete to a point to where they understand that who you are now is not who you're going to be in sort of 10 years has been sort of the coolest journey to be a part of with these women.
Thank you. I think the sooner people can kind of recognize the nature of the journey. I mean, we all talk about it. I feel like it's something that comes up a lot and often in like youth development opportunities, just like, oh, it's life's a journey. Like you're constantly evolving. And then at some point, the pressures and responsibilities of adulting convince you that you've like got to have it all figured out at some point,
right.
You know? And I think that like kind of checking that and being humble and continuing to be vulnerable, I think gets you a lot further than pretending that you've got it all sorted for.
I think you're right. But I also think what's unique about the journey sort of an athlete is that you have control over your destiny, depending on sort of, you know, how hard you work, how focused you are. But at the end of the day, you're going to maybe get some unlucky turns, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of how you're getting through those that's going to determine sort of your next step. But from the moment I picked up a ball, it was always a progression, right? Mm-hmm. I always knew that if I did this, and this, step one, step two, step three, the next step would be from middle school to high school, from high school to college, from college, you know, now the WNBA 1996 was established. I knew that the professional route was sort of my next step. I think the challenge is now when you retire from being an athlete, not necessarily knowing what's next is extremely daunting because we haven't really had to figure it out until now. Mm-hmm. Whereas my college classmates, right, they're well into, you know, their career, right? They had to figure it out after college. We knew that we were going sort of to the professionals and it was already set up, mm-hmm. You know, for us. It was just dependent on sort of the work and focus we put in that determined sort of that next.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. I have such respect for just like your vision of what transition play could be, the way that you're contributing to the community of women that are still in the game and are coming out of the game and all the relationships that you're attending to. And so I'm really curious, especially in light of kind of some of the conversation that's been happening around this particular World Cup, as an athlete and someone who thrives at the intersection of sport, D&I work, and entrepreneurship, how do you see the future of sport evolving related to equity and inclusion?
Wow. No, I think it's a great question. I 100% believe that sports are universal, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the connector of all. Like, you take the FIFA World Cup, and all of these countries are connected around ball. Mm-hmm. And if as a society we can't pull from that and understand that it's very, very easy to come together as one, if you choose to, right? But to your point, about where I see sports going from an equity perspective, obviously people are starting to catch on about women's sports, right? We're now starting to understand the importance of women's sports. You know, we have it in our write-up in the sense that 94% of sea level execs are women, and we played a sport. And so that's an extremely important foundation for young girls to see. So I think we're trending in the right way. I'm excited to see what's next. I'm excited to be a part of that sustainability and growth. I'm super excited.
Thank you. This is Inclusion Catalyst. So I've got to ask, other than your work at Transition Play, what's one example of something you've seen an organization do recently that's really catalyzing change and greater inclusion?
Goodness gracious. And I've brought this organization up before, but it's my most recent engagement, and that's with the Bay Clubs. Mm-hmm. I know James White spoke to that, but I am here because of James White and the work that the Bay Clubs are wanting to do in terms of diversifying the pipeline of talent. And so I say that to say that it's one of the examples of a company who is, one, doing the work. They're taking the initiative to learn outside of their network and what they know. Mm-hmm. Two, they're taking actionable steps to bring in the talent that they want their company to be and become and stand for. So I have to give a ton of credit to Matthew Stevens, who's the CEO, and the entire Bay Clubs team for just approaching it with diversity, inclusion, and belonging. And
finally, before we let you go, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Google. No, I'm kidding.
That'd be the easiest way, right?
Right. Obviously, we all have social media. So Instagram is just Alaina Beard, ALANABEARD. LinkedIn, but also to follow along with everything that I'm doing, whether it's news or events or things of that nature. Linktree.
Okay.
Is another platform. Cool.
Well, Alaina, I feel so privileged to have gotten to spend this time with you today. You're the first professional athlete that I've ever gotten the chance to speak with. It means a lot to me. Thank you. And I have tremendous respect for your vision. And I've no doubt that the bridges you're building are critical infrastructure. And I think they'll soon be filled to capacity. So thanks so much for joining us and sharing your perspective, experience, and insights with our audience. Does bring us to the end of this episode. Special thanks again to you, Alaina Beard, for joining us for an honest and great heart discussion. And thank you to our listeners for spending this time with us. We hope that you heard something of value and that it helps you to lead more inclusively. Do you know anyone that needs to hear this message? If so, be sure to click that share button. You can connect with me, Julian Geiser, and Great Heart Consulting on LinkedIn. Alaina, you have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you, Julian. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
And that's it for this episode of Inclusion Catalyst. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues.